I call to order docket number 2558, the residential property rate appeal hearing of National Lloyds Insurance Company, directed by Article 5.26-1 of Senate Bill 14 enacted by the 78th Texas Legislature. I'm Jose Montemayor, Commissioner of Insurance. It is approximately 1:30 p.m., September the 3rd, 2003. Notice of this hearing was posted on the Texas Register on August 18, 2003. This hearing is open to the public. The purpose of this appeals hearing is to receive testimony and evidence for the determination of whether the rate reduction notification issued by the National Lloyds Insurance Company or to the National Lloyds Insurance Company by the department be affirmed or whether a greater or lesser reduction should be ordered. I would like to introduce members of the department staff here on the podium with me, my general counsel, Gene Jarman, and Norma Garcia, Deputy Commissioner of Legal and Compliance, and Janae Bukowski, Senior Actuary of the Property and Casualty Division. Our goal is to complete this hearing this afternoon. We have a number of hearings to conclude, and I will ask everyone to cooperate to the greatest extent possible. For the benefit of the record and the court reporter, I will now ask each counsel for each party here to identify themselves and who they represent. So if you would, make your announcements at this time.
Go ahead. For the department, my name is Alyssa Long. I'm a staff attorney. With me is staff attorney Sylvia Delgado.
Hey, Commissioner, my name is Will Davis of the Austin Law Firm of Heath, Davis, and McCullough. And we represent the applicant, National Lloyds Insurance Company.
Very good.
Or the appellant, however you want to put it.
Thank you. Does either party have any preliminary matters that they wish to present at this time?
I don't believe so.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So we'll move to the opening statements of the parties, and I would ask that the statements be brief. Article 526-1 directs that the party with the burden of proof is the party with the that they appeal the rate notification notice issued by the department. So, Mr. Davis, you may proceed with your opening statement at this time, to be followed then by Ms. Long for the department.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. For purposes of the record, I will once again say that this is Will Davis speaking, the attorney for National Lloyds Insurance Company, which is the appellant in this particular proceeding. We thank you for the opportunity to be here. We understand the process, we think, and we will do the very best to comply with your admonition about being brief and being succinct and completing this hearing today. I've got other business in the morning, and I cannot afford to not be there. Otherwise, my doctor will pick in harsh actions against me.
We can't have that, Mr. Davis.
We've got to keep those doctors
happy. No, let's conclude it today.
We have to keep those doctors happy, don't we? But at any rate, Commissioner, National Lloyds Insurance Company is a Texas domicile Lloyds in Waco, Texas. It is a very, very sound, a very fine company in this state. As you know, and all the staff people know, that this proceeding and this rate regulation is the first exposure National Lloyds has had to rate regulation. As a Lloyds company, Senate Bill 14 has subjected them to rate filings and rate regulation for the first time, and we're going to do everything we can to comply with your law and satisfy you as a regulated insurer. I will make the point that during the course of this proceeding, you will know if you don't already know, or you will discover if you don't already know, that National Lloyds is a carrier which is focused upon the underserved marketplace. There will be testimony from both Mr. Robinson, Chief Executive Officer of the company, and Mr. Pearl, who's an actuary, to that effect, that this carrier has long since focused its writings on the underserved market, low-value dwellings, and has been successful in that activity. And this year, they opened up their marketplace and in response to the problems that we had in the early part of the year and last part of last year on market availability. And Mr. Robinson and his partners put more than $10 million additional capital into the company so that they could write additional coverages, and also took in some partners on a co-insurance or reinsurance agreements that allowed them to participate as well. But I think you'll find that with the emphasis upon the underserved market, the company believed at one time that it was not going to be subject to regular regulation by the commissioner under the provision of Senate Bill 14, because of a section, Article 7 and Section 7.01 of the new law, which provided for underserved market carriers, which complied with certain Article 5.35-3, would be exempt from this proceeding. But as things worked out in reviewing the volumes, it turned out that under the existing census tracts, they did not qualify for that. They were wrong about that provision. We have subsequently, and at that time, orally said to the commissioner that maybe we ought to expand those areas that are underserved, and maybe the National Lodge and other lodge companies serving the underserved could be exempt. But that's not the case today, and so we will go forward with our presentation of testimony. It is our belief, quite sincerely, that the rate reductions which the commissioner set forth in a notice to this company, which those rate reductions, if you don't recall, were 16.5% for homeowners and 26.5% for dwellings and fire and EC. It is our honest belief that those reductions, if imposed on the company, would render us with inadequate rates and would subject us to serious questions of our solvency during the following calendar year. And we think that obviously endangers the solvency of the company, and we would urge the commissioner to give serious consideration to the recommendations to leave our current rates in place, which the rates we filed are exactly the same rates that National Lodge has been using. They were not an increase or decrease. They're the same that we have been using for the last several years. That's all I have to say. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Davis, thank you. Ms. Long.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Davis. As you're aware, it took a lot of time and energy to get us to this point in the legislature, in the eye of the public, the industry, and the department. On June 11th, Governor Perry signed Senate Bill 14, laying out this current yet abbreviated process that we're all subject to. National Lloyds made their initial rate filing pursuant to Article 5.26-1. The department actuaries reviewed, doing a close scrutiny of the filing, taking into account the position that National Lloyds occupies in the marketplace and the types of business that they write. After taking the actuarial and other special considerations into its mind, it was determined by TDI that National Lloyds was to lower their rates, as Mr. Davis said, 16.5% for homeowners and 26.5% for dwelling fire policies. The evidence already filed and the evidence to be presented today will show that those rates indicated by TDI are adequate, meaning sufficient to sustain projected losses and expenses. Additionally, continued use of the rate will not endanger the solvency of National Lloyds, nor will continued use of the rates have the effect of substantially lessening competition or creating a monopoly within any market. In summary, those rates indicated by TDI for National Lloyds are not excessive, not inadequate, not unreasonable, and not unfairly discriminatory for the risks to which they apply.
Thank you very much. I appreciate those opening remarks. I believe it's time to swear in the witnesses, so all persons here that are going to offer testimony in this case, please stand and raise your right hands to be sworn. Do you and each of you swear or affirm that the testimony you will give in this hearing is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Commissioner, at this time, Mr. Davis and I would like to jointly introduce exhibits that, if that might be all right with you.
Yeah, that will probably greatly facilitate the process, and I have no objection to that. Please proceed.
We both agreed. I've given you a copy, as well as Mr. Davis, of TDI Exhibits 1 through 6, which constitute the procedural matters to which we're all here, and we have jointly agreed to that, I believe.
I've received those, and they're acceptable.
Okay. Admitted. Without objection.
Thank you.
you have pre-filed and have the pre-numbered also 7 and 8?
Correct. We have not pre-numbered the direct testimony, Exhibit 7, and the rebuttal, Exhibit 8, as well.
Okay. Do you offer that now for...
If you would like me to do so, I will offer that at this time.
Okay. Without objection, I take it?
That can be admitted without objection.
Okay. Admit it then. So we have admitted 1 through 8.
Correct.
Okay. If any witness comes in later, please let me know that the witness is here so they can be properly sworn before offering the testimony. I don't know that to be the case, but if it is, please keep that in mind. Well, Mr. Davis, I think you get to call your first witness at this point.
All right. National Law College, Justin Robinson. Are we going to use this podium?
Yes, is that all right?
That's fine.
Hopefully, do you... Yeah, I think that they'll probably be there.
Would you please state your name? Full name.
My name is Charles Clifton Robinson.
Where do you live, Mr. Robinson?
I live in Waco, Texas.
Mr. Robinson, what is your relationship to National Lloyds Insurance Company?
I am one of the sole shareholders. I am the chairman and chief executive officer, and have been operating the company in that capacity for 39 years.
Now, when you say shareholder, are you talking about a related company or the National Lloyds?
I'm talking about.
Suggesting maybe National Lloyds doesn't actually have shareholders.
Well, I'm the I'm the sole shareholder of the holding company that has the operation of National Lloyds.
That may be the question we did. Under the Holding Company Act of Texas, are you the ultimate controlling person?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I am.
And are there any other controlling persons of National Lloyds Insurance Company?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Tell us something about your background in terms of education or business relationship as it pertains to National Lloyds.
I graduated from Baylor University. I went into the insurance agency business in 1961. I was in the insurance agency business until 1964. At that time, we purchased National Lloyds in San Antonio and moved it to Waco. During the course of this 39 years, I have owned and operated probably 6 life insurance companies around the United States and in Texas, and an equal number or perhaps more in the state of Texas. All I've done my entire life is what I'm doing right now.
And during the entire period of time, has National Lloyds been the company which you, in the property and casualty business that you were operating?
Yes, sir, it has. I have been the operator of National Lloyds.
Does National Lloyds have any affiliate insurance companies currently in the property and casualty business?
We have one company, American Summit Insurance Company, which is also domiciled in Texas.
And are you the chief executive officer of that company?
Yes, sir, I am.
Mr. Robinson, do you have before you a document that looks like this?
Yes, sir, I do.
If I may, Commissioner, this is going to be exhibit number 9. Are there other counsel of the state that do not have those exhibits?
Is this what you pre-filed?
Yes.
Okay, I have actually included that under 7 as part of the direct testimony, if that's all right with you.
Okay.
We can make it 9 if you would prefer to have it separately.
Make it 9.
Okay. It is at the end of what has been pre-marked as exhibit number 7, then.
Okay. Submit it as number 9, then.
Mr. Robinson, you have before you the exhibit that I have just marked as exhibit 9.
Yes, sir.
Yours may not be marked, but is it the same exhibit from the standpoint of accuracy?
Yes, sir, it is.
Are you familiar with that exhibit?
Yes, sir, I am.
Are you familiar with its contents?
Yes, sir, I am. I had that content made in our inside our company.
Was the exhibit prepared under your supervision, direction, and control?
Yes, sir, it was.
Does it accurately and fairly and correctly reflect the facts and information relating to National Large Insurance Company?
Absolutely.
Are those statements true and correct?
Yes, sir.
I would like, Commissioner, if appropriate, to have Mr. Robinson go through the exhibit and testify about it. Appears there are married farm. I may interrupt him, but you may, and ask questions if you like as we go forward. I think it would move much more expeditiously to let him explain it than have me interrupting constantly and asking questions. That's all right.
Please proceed.
May I ask a question? Did you prepare this exhibit, or did Mr. Pearl prepare this exhibit?
I asked Mr. Robinson if it was prepared on his. Of this company and set forth in that exhibit and tell us something about National Lodge. I don't want you to read it. I want you to just tell us as you know it from your head and mind.
In 1964, a group of individuals in Waco and myself purchased National Lodge from Pat J. Morris in San Antonio. The company was organized in 1948. Did not do very much between 48 and 64. In 64, we brought it to Waco, literally in the back of a car in one small box.
Mr. Robinson, could you hang on just a minute? I'm not sure we have the right exhibit here.
Yeah, I have more if you need, Mr. Drummond.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we got it. I think we probably just got one of these.
They haven't changed since I filed them yesterday.
I'm sorry, I did not receive a copy of that. That's why I'm confused.
Well, I left it on the secretary's desk outside your office, and she said she'd be happy to give it to you.
I did get a copy of your pre-filed written testimony, but it was not this. Excuse me.
That's different.
You know,
that's different. Yeah, that's different. Yeah. This is a different document.
Oh, okay.
Do you have another copy? Do
you happen to have another copy, Mr. Davis?
We thought we had extras.
We thought we were all squared away.
Two, three yesterday.
Thank you.
You guys got a lot of stuff on your plate.
Yes, that's a lot of paper.
I'm really interested in you. Do you have one?
Right here. It's right here, and I mostly intend to listen to Mr. Robinson. I can always refer to this later. So go ahead, Mr. Robinson.
And resume where you were.
Like I was saying, we brought National Lloyd back almost in a shoebox. And at that particular time in October of 1964, 39 years ago, next month, we began to write low-value dwellings. And we have continued to write low-value dwellings our entire career. Somewhere along the way, low-value dwellings began to be known as underserved property markets. And that is the market that we have served for 39 years consistently, and that is the market we serve today. We have had an A rating by AM Best for 31 or 2 years of the 39 years that we've been in business. The reason we've had an A rating is we run an exemplary insurance company, and we always have, and hopefully we always will and can. We have over 3,000 agents in Texas that we've been loyal to that have also been loyal to us. At the end of 2002, we had around 80,000 policyholders, and that number today, I'm sure, is over 100,000. The world insurance markets changed beginning with the events of 9/11, with the great catastrophe in New York, and those events trickle down to every state in the United States and caused a part of the Texas market to have the problems that we have. AM Best has reported the surplus has, of all the property and casualty companies, has shrunk by $90 billion in 2001 alone. despite what has gone on in the United States and Texas, our company has kept its doors open in a very difficult time for us to keep our doors open because of our capital. We have remained committed to serving our agents who had no, perhaps in some areas, no other place to go with their business. And we think we've done a service for the state by keeping our doors open. Our niche has always been low-value dwellings, the underserved market, and will always be that market. We have two products that we sell. We sell the basic fire and allied lines, the TDP-1, and the homeowner A product. The majority of our business has been produced in fire and allied lines until actually in 2001 when we really introduced our homeowner product. Prior to that, we merely wrote fire and allied lines. Our average fire insurance policy on our dwelling is $39,000, and our average homeowner A policy is $69,000. As a percentage, our premium is very low in relation to the other insurance companies operating in this state who write higher value, and because of that, our underwriting costs are much more because we have to look at every risk. They're located in the underserved areas, and the necessity to constantly review those risks is a very expensive procedure. The reinsurance markets after 9/11 also began to harden and become, in many cases, unavailable to many, many companies. And we have already had, in 2003, several catastrophes where we have already hit our reinsurance companies, and our reinsurance broker, as you'll see as we go on, has already advised us that our retention is going to go up from $1.5 million to possibly as high as $4 million, and our premiums are certain to go up.
Reinsurance premiums are direct.
These are reinsurance premiums. The rate history of National Lloyds has been very minimal. We rarely ever raise our rates. After the Cinco de Mayo storm of 1995, we had a small increase of 8.4% after that time. And since that time, we have had one additional 8% rate increase. That's since 1996. We pride ourselves on our underwriting. We underwrite every risk. We re-underwrite every risk. We underwrite to market value and not to replacement cost. We send inspectors out to look at our houses to get pictures of them. We don't credit score anyone. We accept people who have had a prior claims history. We accept people who've had prior mold or water losses. We write the residual market, as it's referred to, in the totally underserved area. Other companies have tried doing what we do using the rates that we use, and they fail miserably. Many, many companies have come to me over the years and said, "What is your secret? We copy your rates, we copy your forms, we do everything, and we can't do what you do." Our success is due to our underwriting ability, strictly our underwriting ability. That's what I thought I was supposed to do. As a matter of fact, in telling this story here today, I would like for it to go on the record that I have told this story to many members of the legislature in the last regular session, and they felt that our company and companies like our company should be exempted from this hearing here today, and accordingly they made a provision in Senate Bill 14 that we be exempted. However, as we all know, a technicality concerning underserved areas is because we're here today. It was the intent, and I think that has been reasonably presented to the commissioner, that it was the intent of the legislature that companies that serve the underserved market, which we do, and companies like us were not intended to be here in the struggle for survival.
About your competition.
There are a number of other companies that have come into this market, some of which have learned what we do and have copied us almost exactly. Many surplus lines companies are here with non-admitted companies. There are programs that are generated by managing general agents, mostly for non-admitted companies. And, of course, now the biggest competition of all, which is the Texas Fair Plan. No one can compete with the Texas Fair Plan.
You told us about the rate history. Why don't you go to the reinsurance and explain that?
Well, as I mentioned, the catastrophe reinsurance that we presently purchase, our retention is expected to go up from $1.5 million, that's on each loss, up to $4 million. We're expecting increased cost on all of that, and part of that is due to our concentration in Texas and the zip code concentration that we have, because we serve these underserved markets in these zip codes, and we have enormous concentrations. We're not able to spread this out over the entire state like a normal insurance company. We have terrific concentrations in underserved zip codes, which, as earlier indicated, we did present these zip codes to the department to show them that there are many, 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 many more underserved zip codes rather than the very handful that were presently in the insurance code. The next page is a copy of a letter that we received recently from our reinsurance broker, which corroborates what I'm telling you here today, that our retention is going to be materially increased under our catastrophe policy, and also that our premiums are for sure going to go up substantially. Like I mentioned earlier, we've already hit them three times this year, twice in Texas and once in Tennessee.
All right, sir. How about you mentioned earlier about AM Best, but what is your consistent rating there?
Well, our first rating from AM Best, I think it was 1970, it might have been 1971, was A, and we have had an A rating. We have had as high as an A plus, and we have had as low as an A minus. But we have been a consistent A rated company for 31 years, a fact that I'm extremely proud of. We're a regional carrier, and as a regional carrier, AM Best views us with a very jaundiced eye for obvious reasons, and I'll get into those a little bit later. We have 3,000 independent agents that represent our company. Probably no other company in Texas has the number of agents representing them that we have, because they don't specialize in serving underserved areas and underserved people. They specialize in other areas, and our average insurance agent only produces $15,000 a year in premium income to the company on a gross basis. We have, at the end of 2002, coverage for over 80,000 people and certainly over 100,000 now. We have had no one complain about our premiums. To my knowledge, this department has not had one complaint about National Lloyd's premiums being too high. We have a very low complaint ratio total for our overall company. We think that that proves stability of what we do and have done in serving the underserved markets for this state. We have remained open to new business at great, great troubles for me as the owner and shareholder who is having to come up with the capital to support the writings, to maintain our A rating.
Mr. Robinson, you've generally referred to the underwriting practices of the company, but would you be more specific at this point?
Yes, sir. I'm listing here the underwriting criteria that we more or less use. We do not use credit scoring. We don't have minimum square footage requirements. We have no limitations on the age of the roof or the condition of the roof. Previous water losses are acceptable. We have no minimum insurable value. We'll insure a house for $100 if that's what they want. We insure to market value rather than replacement cost. And what that does is not cause a man to buy insurance that he doesn't need when, in fact, his house is located in a low-end area. The market is $30,000 and the replacement cost is $60,000. We don't require him to buy $60,000 to replacement cost. If he wants to buy $10,000, we'll sell it to him or any amount he wants. We have no requirement on that. We inspect every risk that we insure. We reinspect every risk that we renew. However, not every year. We do it periodically as we look at the risk and we think the risk may be deteriorating more rapidly than a normal risk. We serve the underserved and declining neighborhoods, and we do have a $50 minimum premium.
Thank you. Mentioned about independent agency. Anything else, sir, you need to tell the commission?
Well, perhaps it's very costly to develop the relationship that we have with our agents. An agent-company relationship is not one that's going to be profitable if the agent and company are distant from each other. If you're friends with the agents, they don't send you the house that's already burning or the house that the firebug has lived in and burned three before he got to you. They don't send those to their friends. So our secret of our success is not in our race, but in our underwriting and our friendly development of relationships with our agents. And that's very costly, very time-consuming, but we spend an enormous amount of time developing these relationships. The licensing fees and things of that nature for 3,000 agents is different than it is for any other company operating in this state.
Tell us about your capital resources as a Lloyd's company.
Well, we're small, privately held, and we don't have the ability to attract funds from the big public markets. We can't issue securities and bonds and issue more common stock. We have to go out, I have to go out and secure it myself through bank credit. Our investment income is a minimum due to our premium size. We're very small in premium, and we don't have a lot of investment income. Our money is in and out. We take in premium, we pay out claims. We don't have large sums that develop enormous sums of income. The demographics of our policyholders requires that we bill them. We have a monthly billing program, and because of that monthly billing program, these people, many times, they have to send cashier checks, they send cash, and when they do, they forget to pay their premiums, and we're constantly having to cancel policies for non-payment of premium, and then we have the costly process of reinstating their policy, and we have to many times play ping pong with that process on and on and on to try to continue to serve the market for these people who cannot buy any insurance anywhere else in this manner.
Mr. Robinson, let me interrupt and ask you if underwriting profit is more important to surplus growth in your company than investment income.
Well, we wouldn't survive on anything except underwriting profit. If we don't make an underwriting profit, I'm going out of this business today.
And we have talked about the fact that you're in underserved. Do you write other markets as well?
Well, underserved, you know, by definition, is located. There are lower income folks. Some of them live in rural areas. We have a large percentage. A half of our business is tenant occupied. It's not even owner occupied business. It's rent houses. In 2002, our market share was 1.025%. We have a very low, as I mentioned earlier, complaint ratio, and to my knowledge, not one complaint regarding our rates.
That market share is statewide, Texas?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I didn't make that clear.
I asked you to prepare an exhibit, which is on page 14, relating to the number of dwellings or insurance properties that you have according to certain dollar values. Would you explain that exhibit to the commission?
Yes, sir. The top left column on the occupancy of the dwellings, we have on the left side as of December 31st, 2002, and on the right side as of June 30th, 2003. And we've broken them down into owner-occupied and tenant-occupied. And you can see in 2002, 45%, 45.62% of our business was owner-occupied, and 54% was tenant-occupied. In 2003, as of June 30th, 48.47% was owner-occupied and tenant-occupied, 51.53%. Now, the schedules below are listed. We have dwellings in the middle and homeowners in the bottom. And we have listed the number of units or houses that we have insured under $10,000 all the way up to $100,000 with a $35,000 average value. That was as of 12/02. And as of 6/30/03, that value has gone up to $39,000, and we have the same schedule under $10,000 up to $100,000. And below, we have listed the exact same thing for homeowners as of 2002 and homeowners as of June 30th, 2003, with the average value of $61,000 in 2002, and as you can see, it's risen to $69,000 average value in 2003. Probably no other insurance company in America would begin at our average value. Regardless of what the rules are, they're not going to write the low-end homeowners. They don't do it. The Fair Plan does.
Mr. Robinson, the chart shows a substantial increase between December 31st, 2002 and June 30, 2003 in homeowners' writings, correct?
Yes, sir.
Why is that?
Because the other companies have withdrawn from Texas. There's been not very much competition, and obviously our rate must be low enough that it's attracting an awful lot of business, or we wouldn't have grown so much had we had an abusive rate.
The next part of this exhibit, Commissioner, shows some pictures and also some graphics about some of their insured properties. Let me ask you, Mr. Robinson, first of all, are these typical, atypical, or did you go out and find some that you just like to look at?
Well, I instructed them to be very careful and not being overly, I don't know exactly what the word is, not to misrepresent the average, that they go in and they pull them out of the file, pull them out, put them in here, and copy them. If they're good, they're good. If they're bad, they're bad. I look at some of them in here, and I wonder why we're on that, quite frankly. But I think these are typical. We have done this of dwellings, and we have done it for homeowners. And I would like to, at this time, on the first page, I'll be happy to run through these with you. You look at the picture. The first one we have is insured for $10,000. And it's...
It's easier to see that if you look at the picture. He actually shows the insurance amount. Not above the picture.
And you can see that house hadn't had a paint job, and it's got roll roofing on it. And it's been sitting there looking like that for probably 50 years. The next house is insured for $15,000. It's an owner dwelling, and it looks like a pretty nice little house. Looks like a nice house. I'm proud to say we got that one. The next one is insured for $20,000, Maria Gonzalez. That looks like a asbestos siding house. Doesn't look like a bad house. We're proud to have that. That woman cares about her house. We worry about pride of ownership probably more than anything, that we're not the only person that cares about whether or not that house burns. The next house, Linda Collins, $25,000. You can see the condition of that house, not too good. Martin Gutierrez in Houston, $25,000, a nice little house. Happy to have every one of those in the United States. The next one, Charles Hart, insured for $25,000. Again, a nice house. It's by our standards. Happy to have that, and again, like to have all we could get. Here's one for $28,000, insured in Corpus Christi. Again, a nice house. Happy to have that. Asbestos siding. The next one is insured for $30,000. You can see part of the roof coming off over on the side. Appears to be located in a rural area, and that's probably pretty typical of what we write right there. The next one, Brian Copley, insured amount is $30,000. Another nice, what we consider nice house in Amarillo, Texas. Brian Burks and Lubbock, insured for $40,000. Appears to be another owner dwelling that we like. Looks good. Now the next group of pictures that we have are our homeowners. And this is, I'm sure, typical of what our homeowners look like. The first one is insured Leslie Eddings for $25,000. You see her little flowers and flower pots. They have a dog. That's a problem for us. Our main liability claims are dog bite claims, and we try to find out if that's a Rottweiler or one of those bad dogs. We try not to insure it, but we end up with, seems like, all of them in Texas anyway. Patricia Gonzalez in Wichita Falls. This policy is insured for $40,000, and that's probably a typical policy of ours. John Snyder in Lubbock, insured $40,000, another typical policy. Flora Dickinson in Vernon, Texas, again, another typical policy. Here's Ann Pham in Wichita Falls, insured for $40,000. Typical policy. Miguel Guerrero, insured amount $41,000, located in Dallas. Another typical policy. Teresa Collins, insured amount $47,000 in San Antonio. Again, she's got her flower pots out there. She cares about her house. We'll take her all day long, regardless of the little bit of junk in the backyard, because she cares about her house. Judy Atwell in Amarillo, $54,000. You see, she cares about her house. Regardless, the condition is not very good. The roof's bad. But we care about her because she's going to look after that house. Linda Willis in Dallas, insured amount is $56,000. Again, you see the yard is a little bit junky, not really bad, but she's got her little flower pots out there. That's one of our underwriting criteria. She cares about her house.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Robinson. If you look back at page 14 for me, that's the chart, National Auto Insurance Company supporting data chart showing the values of homes and the units that you have all the way from $10,000 to over $100,000. And the number of units that you have shown on that exhibit, I believe it's some maybe almost close to 90,000, 87,000 as of June 30. Are these pictures that you've shown us here reasonably typical of those properties that you're showing on that exhibit on page 14?
Absolutely typical.
All right.
I'd be happy to let anyone come in our office and look through these pictures by the thousands any day, because we got thousands of them coming in every day.
You get pictures on every property?
On every property. And on most of the renewals every year, because we have to. What happens with one of these houses, you take any one of these houses, and if that person dies, and that house sits there 12 months unoccupied, it doesn't look like this a year from now. A year from now, it's completely fallen down. And we have to go back very regularly because these houses deteriorate so rapidly. And one of the things I learned when I was in Baylor University and I took all the insurance courses I had was one of the things that killed the old mutual insurance companies back east is they never grew their book of business. They never changed it. And their houses that they insured that at one time were beautiful two-story homes in nice neighborhoods. Now were dilapidated two-story homes in deteriorating neighborhoods. They never were re-underwritten, and all of those old mutuals that started all went broke because of risk deterioration. And if there's one thing that I've emphasized to the people that work for me, that we cannot allow these risks to deteriorate in front of our eyes. We have to get off of them. And this is our secret. And this is what a few people have learned, but most people don't know how to do it. And our experience is not predicated on luck. It's predicated on experience and hard work and dedication to a cause.
Let me direct your attention, Mr. Robinson, to the last page in the exhibit number 9. You've mentioned Best reports. How important is Best to you and why?
Well, I've been an insurance agent. My father was an insurance agent. I worked in his agency, and we always would never represent a company that wasn't an A-rated company. The A-rated companies are the good companies. They're the companies that are secure and offer policyholders a sound insurance company. AM Best has more experience at identifying good insurance companies and bad insurance companies, and in my opinion, all the regulators that have ever lived in the world, they have more experience at it. They don't change their personnel every week. They're true insurance experts. They rate companies predicated on their ability to pay their claims. They make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. But as a general rule, they're very, very sound in their rating of an insurance company, and without an A rating, my company would not exist. I am too small, and it is vital. Now,
is it important to mortgage lending?
Well, the mortgage loan companies won't accept your policy if you don't have an A rating. Yes, sir. It's vital. I mean, I fought for years in my first 6 or 7 years, or 7 or 8, before I had an A rating. I had to have an endorsement from my reinsurance company agreeing. It was called a guarantee agreement, which is authorized in Texas, attached to each policy to give to the mortgage loan companies to support the stability of my company. It was a guarantee that they would pay if I didn't pay. Now, when I finally got out from under that and got an A rating, I swore I'd never not have an A rating. Now, in their rationale, the first thing they say under rating rationale, this rating reflects the company's strong operating performance, sound capitalization, and overall balance sheet liquidity. The results are due to the company's excellent underwriting performance and consistent investment income, which outperformed the insurance industry composite. Offsetting the positive factors are the company's limited product offerings in its geographic concentration. As a property writer with approximately 85% of its business concentrated in the state of Texas, the company is subject to competitive pressures from multiple line carriers as well as judicial and regulatory actions. Down at the bottom, AM Best says they view the rating outlook as stable. When I was in New York in December, AM Best told me that they were going to cut our Best rating because we're in Texas. because we're in Texas, they're going to cut our best rating. I said, how can you do that to me when I haven't been a part of that problem? My company is not going insolvent like the rest of them down in Texas are. How can you possibly say that? He said, because you're in Texas and you're subject to the calamity that may hit and having your rates cut. And that's why I'm here today, because I know 100%, as God is my witness and I'm standing here, you pick up the phone and you call the man who does our rating and you ask him what they're going to do if you implement these rate decreases that you're proposing. You ask him, and he will tell you he will immediately downgrade my company from an A-rated company. I promise you, he will say that. And his name is Joe Bertone. Call him and ask him. I would love for you to, if it matters.
Mr. Robinson, well, you're not an actuary. Let me ask you, do you have an opinion that's clear enough the proposed rate decreases by the Texas Department of Insurance would render your resulting rates inadequate?
I would like to speak to that.
I ask you a question, but that's you can
answer. The answer is unequivocally yes, into insolvency.
Do you have an opinion as an executive of this company that the rates which you're currently using, which you have filed with the Texas Department of Insurance, are fair, just, reasonable, adequate in their sense, and not unfairly discriminatory?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
I'll pass the witness.
Commissioner, before I question Mr. Robinson, I have a few concerns that I'd like to address at this time. Although Mr. Davis expressed that I received a copy of this, I did not, and I did not have time to fully look on it. Upon fully looking on it, it contains inconsistent information with that provided in the initial rate filing and with their pre-filed direct testimony. Just in the few moments I've been sitting here looking through it, page 5 and page 14 contain inconsistent calculations per my actuary, Phil Presley. In addition, I'm concerned with hearsay implications. There's a letter, I believe, that's being offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted, as well as the AM Best letter and the testimony by Mr. Robinson on that letter. Finally, I am also concerned about the privacy information of the homeowners and the dwelling policies that is contained in this if it were to be on the public record. And I apologize, but I had not had a chance to look through this, nor has my actuary, and as I said, has performed some of the calculations on page 14, and they do not match up with those in the initial rate filing or the substantiating information that I received in the pre-file testimony from Charles Pearl.
Just a minute. Ms. Long, are you lodging an objection or voicing a concern?
I'm lodging an objection.
All right. Well, let me ask counsel to. And the objection is specifically.
My objection is to. I would object to the introduction of this exhibit merely because I haven't had the chance to fully look through, and I have seen portions of it that I would object to, but at this time I'd like to object to the whole thing being entered.
All right, counsel.
Commissioner, It's my understanding from the conference I had a week ago with General Counsel was that we were supposed to pre-file direct testimony of our actuaries. And I knew nothing about having to pre-file every piece of evidence that we were going to file. Rule 1.14 of the operational rules of this department permit us to file narrative testimony and use narrative testimony and or question and answer testimony in pre-file. This is a narrative testimony. But I had no, in fact, I believe I was told specifically that the pre-filing a week by noon yesterday was to be applicable only to the actuary's testimony. I have received testimony myself today from witnesses that I did not receive from the department earlier. This information in Exhibit 9 was prepared by the company. Mr. Robinson said it was not prepared by the actuary. I don't know of any inconsistencies. I haven't looked for any inconsistencies.
I'm going to withhold ruling on this objection until we have a little time to sort it out.
Specifically, I, the ones that I've noticed in the few minutes that I'm sitting here, pages 5 is inconsistent with their filing. Excuse me. Their rate changes are stated inconsistently in the TDI Exhibit 2 initial filing as well as their pre-filed direct testimony by their actuary. The calculations on page 14 are also inconsistent with their filing, and I would object. In response to Mr. Davis, this folder contains not only narrative testimony as well as pictures and other data, but calculations and numbers, which I believe my actuary should have had the opportunity to look at before today's hearing.
Well, okay. Sounds like there were two or three little objections. That's how we'll dispose of them. As to the inconsistency objection, I'm going to overrule that. You have an opportunity to cure it during cross-examination. As to the additional time required to view it, let me hold off until the end of the hearing and rule on it. It may well be that we can review it through the breaks, or if we need additional time, maybe we'll provide for it at that point.
Commissioner, may I suggest that if you are going to allow this into evidence, that we white out the personal addresses and information of the policyholders?
Mr. Davis, are you amenable?
Yeah, that's agreeable.
Okay. It sounds like we may have a way to deal with this. So in terms of the inconsistencies, you can cure that on cross. I'll hold off judgment on additional time. We may be able to just provide for additional time if required. And in terms of the concern regarding the privacy of the people here, maybe we just go to a whiteout or a marker and black it out.
If I may have a brief recess to look through the information before I cross-examine Mr. Robinson.
Yes, certainly. That's reasonable. Why don't we take a 20-minute recess and we can come back at 5 to 3, and at that point we'll just pick it up. So 20 minutes, give you a little time to
review. That's perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We stand recessed at this point, off the record.